to do is not really to create a new phenotype for feed efficiency, but rather find a newer, better way to actually select for the feed efficiency parameters that we use to create feed efficiency phenotypes. So, like Dr. Weber said, we worked with the USDA Meat Animal Research Center in Clay Center, Nebraska. That's where we got all of our data from. And then, of course, Kansas State University, and then we had a small grant through the American Simmental Association. So we'd like to thank all three of these organizations for the collaboration on this effort, and I think that it's a very exciting topic to be a part of. So why is this important to us as producers? We look at profit, and if you know your main goal in any operation is to be more profitable, and we really break down feed efficiency. If we have a 10% increase in gain, that's going to increase our profits by 18%. But we know that if we use feed intake records and gain together, we can have efficiency measures. And a 10% increase in efficiency actually equates to a 43% increase in profit. So that was really kind of, you know, the foundation of why we wanted to figure out a better way to be able to test for these two parameters. So in order to get feed efficiency phenotypes, we need gain and intake data. So our gain data usually comes to us as average daily gain, and that needs to be tested on at least a 70-day interval according to the BIF recommendations. And that's a number that allows us to maintain a certain degree of accuracy so we can accurately predict a phenotype or an EPD for feed efficiency. And then, of course, we need the feed intake data, which is collected readily through Instantech or grossing systems today. But even though
we can more easily collect feed efficiency data or feed intake data, it's still very expensive for us to do. So we got to make sure that we can make this an economical process for our producers to do so we can collect that data as researchers and as breed association representatives so we can use it to make selection tools for these producers. So as we look over the current BIF standards, there's a recommended 70-day test for both gain and feed intake data. And like I said, that's pretty much limited by that gain test. In order to get the degree of accuracy we need to take it out to the full 70-day test with a 21-day warm-up period in order to collect those data for feed efficiency. But we have, there's many literature estimates and studies out there that support a 35-day intake test. And while when we shorten that test to 35 days for feed intake, we have a slight loss in accuracy. If we think about the increase in selection intensity or the number of animals that we can get tested through those systems in that shortened amount of time, because we're decreasing the amount of days that they have to be on those grow safe units or Instantech units, it allows us to better predict feed efficiency because we have an increase in the number of animals that have those phenotypes. So if we think about it, if we could use that 35-day intake test, we could basically cut these testing parameters in half. This would allow for a decreased testing cost per animal because we're running more animals through the same feeding units. And like we talked about in our last slide, it increases our selection intensity because we're allowed to choose from a higher selection pool or a larger number of animals. So that's going to drive up our overall rate of genetic improvement for feed efficiency. So just to give you a little bit of numbers, there's a study by a group in Australia that says you could save roughly $27 a week per animal if we could cut the testing costs by 1 week when they're in these feeding units. So I just put together a small chart here that kind of lets you look at the differences among a 70-day test. So that's what we currently do to a 35-day intake test. So that's what the literature supports. And you're basically cutting the testing period from 10 weeks to 5 weeks. And then I added in a $70 fixed cost per head for that 21-day warm-up period. So just kind of a rough estimate of some of the savings that people could be put on their operations if we could test just for 35 days. So in order to do this, we have to find another probable gain source. I talked about twice already that the reason why we're currently testing for 70 days is so we don't lose too much accuracy in our gain collection. And so therefore, we can't test gain for only 35 days. But what our study really looked at was, is there another probable gain source? So the one in current use is going to be those on-test average daily gains, which is basically multiple weights taken throughout a test period, and then it's regressed back to be able to find a predicted final and a predicted start weight that's then used to derive average daily gain. So for many people that are involved in breed associations or submit records to a breed association, you know something known as post-weaning gain. And basically what this is the closest thing to free data that anyone can get, because producers are already reporting these weights to their breed associations. So basically what post-weaning gain is the gain that we derive by national cattle evaluation, and it's just two weights. It's a weaning weight and a yearling weight that is then adjusted for age of dam and age of calf, and then we use that to predict gains. So instead of placing them on a specific weight gain test, we're just collecting a weight around 205 days of age and 365 days of age and using that as our gain parameter. So if we think about where we're measuring these gain sources, we look at this growth curve, and we're really measuring between this 8 to 12 months in a calf. So 8 months would be that weaning weight, that 205 day of age, and then 12, obviously, your 365 day of age. And if we look at where we're collecting those 205 and 365 day weights and where we're going to collect our untest data, which is going to be some point on that green line, this is a fairly linear part of the growth curve. And so we would think that both of these traits are very similar in what they're actually collecting. So from there, we looked at the gain portion of this scenario, and we looked at if we could use post-weaning gain in replace of on-test average daily gain in order to predict feed efficiency. And then we took it one step further and said, how could we use either post-weaning gain in feed intake or average daily gain in feed intake in an index to more accurately select for feed efficiency? So we're going to get into, can we find another way to select for feed efficiency by using that shortened 35-day feed intake test and another gain source? And in this case, we're looking at that post-weaning gain. And then if we combine those parameters in a properly weighted index with that 35-day intake test and gain test, what are the amount of genetic improvement that we get each year? And then, like I said, subsequent increase in genetic change. So our first part we did, looking at if post-weaning gain could be used in replace of or in complement to average daily gain, was to quantify the relationship between post-weaning gain and on-test data. So basically, we're looking at the correlations or how related these two were. So we had all of our data collection, like we spoke of before, from U.S. MARC, and we had about 5,600 total records in this study that represented a total of 27 different breed groups, so a fairly representative study of the population. So we had 3,200 steers and about 2,400 heifers on this trial, and we put them all together in a six-trait animal model and kept the sexes separately. So males and females were identified separately in this study, basically due to the diet differences that we had. So we wanted to be able to dissect this correlation as much as we possibly could. So for our case, we analyzed sex separately. So again, as we move through the results, I just think it's important to reemphasize our notation. So post-weaning gain is going to be that adjusted yearling weight minus adjusted yearling weight divided by the number of days. Average daily gain, again, predicted final weight minus predicted initial weight divided by the number of days on test, and in this case, it's that 70-day interval. And then average daily feed intake came to me in total dry matter records, and then we divided it by the number of days on test. So just to give you a little background, as you can see, we had a fairly full data set. So improved accuracy as we went about this statistical analysis. And just to kind of give you a little bit of, you know, the kind of records that we were working with. And then this is really kind of the heart of this first part of the project. If we look at the heritabilities, they're going to be on our diagonal estimate here. Our feed intake records, or our feed intake heritabilities for both our steers and our heifers, and our post-weaning gain estimates were right on target with what previous literature had stated. So moderately heritable. In this particular data set, we had a lower heritability estimate for average daily gain for both our steers and heifers. And this could be due to the fact, multiple factors in this case. We haven't really pinpointed the exact reason, but it could be due to the fact that throughout, you know, we tested over a long range, about 7 years, and so we had different test lengths that we didn't regress back to a single standard. Could be one of those reasons, or the fact that we had so many breeds. A lot of the previous literature contained maybe 1-2 or an F1 cross in there, whereas we had breed percentages from 27 different groups. And then the big one that we want to take a look at is this correlation estimate between our gains, so our average daily gain and our post-weaning gains. We had a 0.81, which is extremely high to find in an animal population, and this correlation here tells me that we're probably pretty much looking at the same trait when we look at average daily gain on test and post-weaning gain. And again, we look at the heifer estimate of 0.65. So again, a very high correlation estimate. So probably a post-weaning gain is a fairly good predictor of average daily gain on test. And then one more correlation that I'd like to point out is this correlation estimate between steer average daily gain and heifer average daily gain, which is a 0.39. So a low to moderately heritable, low to moderate correlation. And then the heifer post-weaning gain estimate and the steer post-weaning gain estimate of 0.91. So again, this tells me that for post-weaning gain, steers and heifers have the exact same traits. So in my mind, maybe it's better to use post-weaning gain because we can put steers and heifers in the same analysis. So we wouldn't have to separate sex no matter what the diet tells us. We dissected some of the breed differences, and these charts are all relative to Angus. So for feed intake, you can see that the South Devon breed percentage attributed to lower feed intakes, that Angus intook the most among the steers. You can also see that South Devons, even though they ate less, they didn't gain as much on either our on-test average daily gain or post-weaning gain parameters. And then our Santa Gertrudis had the highest average daily gains, and our Simmentals had the highest post-weaning gains. And these are all in pounds. So a Simmental animal gained 0.35 more pounds per day for our post-weaning gain parameter than Angus is basically how you would read that graph. For our heifers, we broke down the breed differences the same way. Again, our Angus heifers ate the most. South Devons Angus heifers ate the most. Tarentaise ate the least. South Devons gained the most. Angus had the most post-weaning gain among our heifers. And then our Bromvies didn't gain as much as our rest of our relative to the rest of our breeds relative to Angus in our post-weaning gain scenario. So once we found that we had that high correlation of 0.81 and 0.65, we went ahead and put them both into a index in order to look at our response to selection of feed efficiency, whether we're using on-test average daily gain and post-weaning gain. So which one is going to drive up the rate of genetic improvement in feed efficiency more readily? So again, we use the exact same data set. For our on-test average daily feed intake and average daily gain index, we use a 91-day index, and that's concurrent with the recommendations as of right now of a 70-day test with a 21-day warm-up period. And then for our on-test Average daily feed intake and post-weaning gain test, it was 56 days, as we had that 35-day intake test and then a 21-day warm-up period. And remember, we're not taking weight gain data during that 35 days. We're just using that adjusted weaning and adjusted yearling weight in order to get that gain parameter. So this is just a little background information. And the thing I want to point out that in this case, for this index, a more positive value equals a more desirable efficiency or a more efficient animal. And a more negative value is less desirable. So it's opposite of what we would think of, for example, for RFI. So we calculated two different indexes for steers and heifers. The first one is an unrestricted index. So we're placing weighting factors on both our gain and intake data. The relative number attested per year was 1 to 1.62, and this was based on a herd of, this was based on the fact that we could test 100 animals in 91 days. So we could test relative to the 91-day test 1.62 animals relative to our longer test. The relative cost went down by 38% when we switched from the 91-day test to the 56-day test. And then that selection intensity that we are talking about, because we're able to test more animals, also went up to from a 2.06 to a 2.27. So all in all, when we put that in our genetic change equation, we have a 33% improvement per unit of gain and efficiency index versus a 9% gain in efficiency units for our index. So we are getting more genetic change per generation with our index with post-weaning gain, because we're increasing the number of animals that have records and can be put into our system, and we're also increasing our accuracy of efficiency as we move throughout this type of test. So another index that we had was a restricted index for both steers and heifers. Here we can see the steer results. So this restricted index held intake constant, so we weren't trying to make any genetic improvement in intake. This would equate to something along the lines of residual gain, but in a linear index form. So if we look here again, our relative number tested per year is going to remain the same because we're using the same testing facilities and those same foundation group parameters. And then so will our relative cost tested per animal. So we decrease, again, those costs by 38% because we're testing more animals. We're testing more animals on the same units. So again, even with the restricted index, we're still making more improvement by using that post-weaning gain data because we have that increase in the number of animals being tested and higher heritability of efficiency. For our heifers, we saw similar results. I'll just skip right down to the genetic change per index. Here we saw a 9% increase in the amount of genetic change per year when we used the 56-day test. And it just as a reminder, that's that 35-day intake test with our post-weaning gain data versus our 91-day test with both our on-test parameters, where we had still an increase in feed efficiency, but only at a lower rate. And then for our restricted index, again, we actually saw similar results to our unrestricted index, where our 56-day test had more genetic change per generation when you compared it to the 91-day test. So then I took my index, my unrestricted index, and looked at different breed effects. So it's kind of breed effects of efficiency among breeds. For our average daily gain and feed intake index, our Herefords were the most efficient breed. Our least efficient breed were our Brahmins. For our post-weaning gain and average daily feed intake test, our Limousines were our most efficient breed, and our Red Angus were our least efficient breed. So that just kind of ranks the steer population on that efficiency index that I used in those previous calculations. And then for our heifers, For our first index, our South Devons were the most efficient, with our Brangus being the least. And then for post-weaning gain in ADFI for our heifers, our Herefords were the most efficient, while our Brahmins were the least efficient again. So conclusions, just kind of reiterated that we have moderate heritability estimates for post-weaning gain in ADFI, so selection can take place for feed efficiency. We have those strong correlations between on-test and post-weaning gain, so that tells our group that post-weaning gain is a good proxy for on-test average daily gain. We had significant breed effects for average daily gain, feed intake, and post-weaning gain. So breed is playing an effect on how much an animal eats and gains in this case. Implications. We took this 35-day intake test, again, from the literature that says it's long enough to test for feed intake without severe loss in accuracy. We propose combining a 35-day intake test with post-weaning gain data calculated by NCE as a sufficient measure to test for feed efficiency and to predict a phenotype for feed efficiency. And then, obviously, using this type of test would cut the current testing standards in about half, allowing for more animals to be tested per year per facility, so hopefully cheapening those costs that are getting passed on to the producer. And then what we found from our index formulations is that using an unrestricted linear index with our post-weaning gain data allows for maximum genetic progress to be made for feed efficiency. So we took it to this point, and we had some future research goals or ideas as we progress into the future. The first ones are the conclusions applicable in another population? Would regressing the testing days back to a standard test interval change the results at all? Personally, I don't think it would. I think that we did it in the most accurate way because we are really trying to dissect that correlation, and so we're not adding in or taking away variation from our testing days by regressing it back to a standard. What stage in the growing phase would be most applicable to test for feed intake? Obviously, it's 35 days, so would it be right after those calves get weaned or right before you take that yearling weight? So where in that growth period should we test for this feed intake? And then our last point, which I think is an important one to think of, was could adding in test weights collected through that 35-day intake period increase the accuracy for us to predict feed efficiency? So with that, I thank you for your attention, and I'll take any questions.